nation alive. Alive. WBAI. No
justice. This is listener-sponsored, locally controlled WBAI New York.
And the previous program was the Gary Knoll Show, heard Monday through Friday at noon. Stay tuned for Leonard Lopez at Large coming up.
Welcome to Leonard Lopate at Large. I'm Leonard Lopate. Over the years, Lawrence and Alvin U. Bell of Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn have inspired millions of hesitant do-it-yourselfers to take repairs into their own hands. Alvin served as the household hints and safety editor with Family Circle magazine for over two decades. He was a regular on ABC TV's Good Morning America for 5 years and also on ABC's Talk Radio Network for 5 years. And he joins us, Alvin U. Bell joins us now, to offer expert advice to you, our listeners. You can talk to him by giving us a call at 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. And I understand that Larry couldn't make it today, Al, but I'm very pleased to welcome you back to our show.
He had an important errand that had to go, and he asked me, is it okay if I could do it myself? I said, listen, I think I have enough experience. And he looked at my resume, and he said, oh, yeah, you do have a lot of experience.
Actually,
so here I am.
We did shows together
at my son's request.
We did shows together, just the two of us, for many years before Larry even joined us.
Yes.
And we often get seasonal in our conversations because different things pop up at different times of the year that you deal with. Right now, are we thinking spring now or the end of winter? It's such a weird time.
March is the opening door to spring. In other words, in a couple of days or something, we're going to have Eastern Standard Time. Is going to come into click-in.
Yeah, just another
week.
And
we're going to have longer days and shorter nights, except to that effect. However, spring brings on some things that you have to do. All of that took place during the winter, the damage to your property, the damage to the streets, the damage to even in politics. It happens during the winter and the summer, the flowers spring and we have to fix it up.
And people open their windows and all sorts of other things.
Yes,
happen.
Everything.
And we turn off the heat.
Yes.
Turn down the heat anyway.
You turn off the heat, you turn on the air conditioner. Now you have less, you don't turn on the light switches as much, but that's also saving energy.
So we invite our listeners to call and talk about those things. There's also some events in the news that may very well affect our conversation, the coronavirus, for example. Again, the number is 212-209-2877, and we already have a call for you, Al.
Already.
You're on the air.
Am I?
Yes, you are.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for taking my call. Two questions. One is about a cast iron sink that leans, and this might be really complicated. Maybe you could just point me towards, you know, some websites or such. But of course, those cast iron sinks are very heavy, and I mean, how someone would go about straightening it out, you know, because the floor was crooked and it's, you know, 100-year-old building. And the other is about tile in a bathroom. The way they used to do it, if you remove the tile, you'll see that it's the bullnose type thing. So without doing a lot of demolition, how can someone replace tile, you know, because backing board and bondi, all that sort of stuff would bring it out further.
All right. Anyway, you have a bunch of multiple questions there all into one question, and I don't blame you. I would like to ask you a question. This cast iron sink that you talk about, is that a porcelainized sink or is it a raw iron sink, which I know about, which they used to use as slop sinks or in restaurants and stuff like that. And they're sometimes they are cast iron sinks.
Yeah, no, it's personalized. It's a double sink.
It's a double sinker. This is like for a if it's a double sink, that's like for milchdicker and fleischdicker.
Exactly.
So it's leaning somewhere.
Anyway, the thing is with the porcelainized sink, porcelainization is really glazing on top of a cast iron or steel sink or whatever material it may be glazed onto. And so the only way to clean that up, unless it's worn through, is that you have to take some, like, pumice stone,
It's in pretty good shape. No, it leans, though, because the floor...
can't you just put something underneath it to prop it?
There are a lot of leaning sunken floors that lean from, you know, one end of the room to the other.
I would have to take a look at that, how it's being supported or whatever it is, to put brackets underneath it or something to that effect.
In other words, would I need a crane to, like, lift it?
I would have to see the sink itself, because it depends upon what the sink is mounted into, what is supporting it right now, what is actually causing the sink to be sunken or moving or something like that, and that you have to go ahead and try to correct it in an appropriate way without doing damage. Now, let's move on to the other thing about the tile. Well, the tile, if it is clean, most of the time, if you have paint splattered onto it from painting the apartment in some way, that paint could come off with a razor blade or a pushing razor blade. That all that paint could come off. In fact, I just did it for a friend of mine that she had the apartment painted, and it looked terrible that the paint splattered on top of the top rail. And I just took a razor blade and cleaned it all off, and it looks beautiful today. That's what you can do with tile. But if it's caused crazing, which is where you have like an alligator effect of the glazing section of the tile, that is more difficult, because that's a failure of the glaze, and the only way you can replace that is you have to take the glazing out, or take the tile out, or sometimes
they put tile
on top of tile. But that
That's the thing. So I have tiles falling off the wall, tiles that have been poorly replaced, so there's unevenness and such. So if I were to take all the tiles off the wall and around the shower and all, then what you find is that behind that you find those splotches of cement
It depends upon whether that's on a stud wall or what kind of wall or a masonry wall. There's a whole bunch of things that can be done. What I usually do is when I see a tile place that really needs to be done, I clean off all the tile, and then I take what they call concrete board that I put onto the wall, cement it in place, and then on top of that, I put the tile.
That's usually a better way of doing it
without tearing the building apart.
Right.
All right.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And a reminder that our number here is 212-209-2877. That's 209-2877, a 212 number. My guest is Alvin Ubell, and we are talking about all sorts of different approaches to home repair. There are so many different things. We've never talked about tile before, and yet... We've been doing shows for years and years. There's so many different things that come under the rubric of home repair.
Well, I don't call it home repair. Home repair is for those people who have a home or a house to take care of. A person that's in the construction industry, you have to know everything about a building, whether it be an outhouse or a skyscraper. And you have to know how it works, why it works, what is the process that took it together, and why was it put in its place the way it is now.
Now, I read that stairs are the second most, the number two cause of accidents after auto accidents.
Yeah, auto accidents is the top thing that is injuring and killing people in the United States.
So it's just people tripping on the stairs?
On stairs, First of all, you have to realize what a stair is. A stair, whether you're climbing up the stair, going down the stair, it's like climbing a mountain. And all the steps that's sticking out are like outcroppings. And if you fall down, you're hitting each and every of those outcroppings. I have cases that I worked on where people lost limbs trying to save themselves because there was no handrail. There are so many things go wrong with a stair. When a stair is perfect, really perfect, geometrically, slant-wise, height, everything is perfect, it's still a dangerous ascending and descending operation.
But in some cases, stairs are uneven. You see that in some homes where the stairs are all at, you know, like every stair is the same distance from the next one until you get to the bottom, and then suddenly a couple of added inches are
well,
there.
That's the strange thing about it. The technology of stair design and construction dates back 2,000 years to the Roman Empire. They knew about that. They knew that that people are falling down because the steps are not consistent from foot to head. And this is built into the laws and the codes throughout the United States, in fact, throughout the world. But still, people, a person who works on a stair has to understand, not necessarily to build a set of stairs, but they have to understand and appreciate the psychomotor function of a person. When you're walking down a set of stairs and you get two, three steps are okay, you expect that all the steps down that stair going ascending or descending are going to be equal. All of a sudden you hit a step that's not equal to the other ones and you'll find yourself at the bottom of the stair. And that's what causes many of the accidents when a stair doesn't have a handrail. Give somebody a chance to save themselves, to reach out and grasp something that will prevent them from falling down the stair.
But people right now are afraid to touch handrails because of coronavirus.
Well, you have a choice. You can go coronavirus, which is not really rampant throughout the United States right now or throughout the world. It's hitting a lot of people, unfortunately. There's no question about that. But which would you rather do? Have coronavirus for maybe 2 weeks and it'll go away, or have a cracked skull because you weren't working on the handrail and you fell yourself down at the bottom of the stairs?
Can't I just put some gloves on and hold the handrail
that
way?
You can use gloves. The thing is that you have to be – the thing I write about all the time is watch your step and hold on. You only have 2 feet. You're not like a cat or a dog that has four legs and could climb up the stairs. They don't need handrails.
Now, you often testify in the courts as an expert witness. Are most of the cases about things like stairs?
Oh, that's actually my big bailiwick, is testifying about defective stairs. It is quite prevalent on cases where somebody, an amateur, goes ahead and tries to fix a set of stairs and makes them worse than they were before. And this is not unusual. You get somebody, a superintendent in a building, that wants to fix something, and he screws it up, making it worse. And this goes on and on.
My guest on Leonard Lopate at Large today is Alvin Ubell, the guru of how-to. And we are taking your calls at 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. 77. A lot of people rent out their basements. If they have a house in the city, they rent out their basements, and sometimes it's legal and sometimes it's illegal. How do you know the difference?
Well, most people don't know the difference. First of all, there in the city of New York, there's a classification of a basement. What's a basement and what's a cellar? A cellar is when the mean distance between the floor of the cellar to the ceiling, the mean distance, that means if it's an 8-foot ceiling, that at 4 feet is at or below the curb level front. That's how they decide. If it is if that mean distance or the distance in the midpoint is above the curb level front, it's a basement.
Now, why is that a determinant?
Well, that's the way they classify it as a definition of between a cellar and a basement. But in order to have a livable room, a bedroom, say, you have to have a window. If you have a cellar, most likely it doesn't have a window. That's another factor of it. Sometimes with a basement, you may be able to get a window in, but the window has to be 10% of the room area ratio. So in order to have ventilation, in order to have light, also, if suppose there's a fire in the building, you have to have some way that the fireman could break into your room and drag you out before it burns you up. So that's the obvious. There's an inobvious thing about why they don't like you to sleep in a cellar mostly, is because the cellar usually has all kinds of equipment. It has a boiler, it has a hot water system, it has electrical, it has all kinds of equipment, which could reverse for some reason or other. And all of a sudden you have sulfur dioxide or smoke filling up a cellar area, and you don't wake up in the morning as a result of that. That's what takes place. And every one of these laws are not to penalize people. The laws in the building code are there to prevent people from killing themselves and killing others that they don't even know about. So when they give you a violation on what you're doing, they're really trying to save your life. That's exactly what the violation is all about.
And what kinds of things would we be subject to if we didn't wake up in the morning? Is carbon monoxide?
It could be carbon monoxide. It could be suffocation. It could be smoke. It could be a flood. I see in buildings, and I see they have their children sleeping in a cellar area. Mm. What happens? All of a sudden, a pipe breaks. You don't know. It happens in the middle of the night. And the whole basement fills up with water, and your child rolls over. They're gone. They drowned in the basement. It's so dangerous to sleep and live in a cellar area. Those are documents over and over again.
Okay, so let's say I'm looking for an apartment and somebody is renting out a garden apartment or a basement apartment. How would I know whether that was a legal one or not?
Actually, that's pretty easy. What if you do is you go online, and under the Department of Taxation, they have classifications of a building, and they tell you where the livable spaces are. They'll say this is a cellar, or this is a basement, this is a first floor, this is a second floor, this is a third floor. They'll tell you how many floors there are, and it'll also tell you how many families could live in that building. And says this is a two-family house. All of a sudden you have three mailboxes in a two-family house? There must be somebody else there. So those are the things that the building department, when they investigate, once they see two mailboxes, or you come up to a building that's a two-family house and you see four electric meters. Mm. something is going on in that building that shouldn't be.
Should we take some more calls?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, our number here is 212-209-2877. And welcome to WBAI. Speak to Al Ubell. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Quick question. I have common sense about like where to put smoke detectors and fire detectors in a home. Of course, they should normally be as high as possible because of the nature of the dust and the smoke. But my question is about carbon monoxide detectors. Due to the nature of the weight of those molecules, should the CO detectors be as high as possible in the room or as low as possible in the room?
Well, actually, there are things going on in a room, especially it's a room, as a vector that's taking place. What happens when the air is warming up, the air that's warmed up by a radiator will travel to the ceiling, and the cool air will drop down. So what happens is there's almost like an homogenization of the air, whatever gases may come into that space. In the summertime, the same thing, the air conditioning, the cold air drops to the floor, and there's also some sort of homogenization of the gases. The idea is, where do you put the smoke detectors or the fire detectors? They should not be in a kitchen area because you always have smoke from what you're cooking. The alarm goes off all the time. Or you
it
have,
drives your dog crazy or cat crazy.
Yeah.
And doesn't exactly
right.
feel
where
good
they should
to
be
have that going
is in corridors, in the bedroom, that where you're sleeping at night. See, if you're up during the day, you're going to know that there's smoke coming out from someplace. The idea is the most dangerous time of day for the people who occupy buildings is at night when you're out cold. So therefore, put those smoke detectors in the bedroom. Also, there are people that fall asleep on the living room couch. So maybe you should put a smoke detector in the living room area someplace.
And how many? So that means you can have a lot of smoke detectors in.
Sometimes you have two and three in a large apartment, but usually the bedroom. If you have a one or two bedroom, if you have in my apartment where I have two bedrooms, it's right in the corridor area between the two bedrooms, and therefore most of us time that my bedroom doors are open. So, and besides, I'm the only one living in the apartment. So, but if you have a guest or something like that, you want to make sure that everybody's protected.
What are some of the other things that we can do to protect our guests?
Well, there's a lot of things. Right now, it's coming spring, and one of the things that comes across on my desk all the time is children falling out of windows. Ooh. That's a horrible thing because what happened is comes the spring, you want the fresh air coming in. You open up the windows and children are curious creatures.
But wait. Aren't there laws in the city that say you have to have window guards?
Yes, you do. But there are occasions when you may have a guest coming over that they're bringing their children. The law says that you have to sign an affidavit or a document to tell the landowner who owns the property that you do have children or you don't have children. But you also have to understand that do you expect to have children in your apartment? If you expect to have children in your apartment, like cousins and aunts and uncles, and they bring their children with you to greet you, you really should have those window guards put in place because it doesn't cost you anything. They don't charge you extra on the rent and have the window guards in place.
And we have things like, not just in homes, there was that case where a grandfather has just pled guilty for having his grandchild near an open window on a cruise ship.
Well, that
and the kid fell out, and made all the news.
Yes, well, the thing is, children are curious creatures. They're trying to learn everything. They're trying to see what's going on outside when something attracts them. And you have to watch your children. And you also be aware of the dangers. There's some people that are just oblivious to what's going on about them. And that is unfortunate. But the idea is there are dangers all over, and you have to be aware of it.
What rooms do you think are the most dangerous in a house? Would it be the kitchen or the bathroom?
It depends upon the individual. I didn't participate in any statistics on that. But even
the bathroom
is a dangerous place. You have water. If the water temperature in a bathroom is over 140, 150 degrees, you can get a third degree burn in about 2 or 3 minutes, 2 or 3 seconds rather, 4 seconds.
You mean taking a shower?
Yeah, your body temperature is 98.6 Fahrenheit. If you took a thermometer into the water, into the shower or bathtub, and you had your water up to 110 degrees, you're jumping out of that shower. Mm-hmm. It's hot. That 11 degree difference between your body temperature and the actual temperature is hot, really hot.
So should the shower, the heat of the water in the shower be lower than your body temperature?
No,
or around the same?
It should be about 100, maybe 105 degrees. That's nice.
A little warmer.
A little you know, you got to be very careful when you adjust the knobs. Here's the biggest accident. The biggest accident is when people turn the faucet off while they're taking a shower. Water off right away, and they can't touch, and they slip and fall in the shower, and the hot water is spilling onto them. That's when you cut off the cold water. I tell everybody, if you're shutting the water off, turn the hot water off first, slowly, until all of a sudden it gets a little chilly, and then start turning the cold water off. And that could prevent a lot of accidents. Unfortunately, I lost my mother-in-law, or my stepmother-in-law died in a shower of scalding hot water.
Ooh. Another thing that you see in some showers, but not all, are little hand guards.
Well,
should we all, everybody
every
have
every bathtub should have a handrail to hold on to it, because soapy water, let's understand, soapy water is slippery. You're standing up on it. You're a two-legged animal, and if you slip, you got to grasp something. And I... in my own bathroom, I have a bar the full length of the bathtub from one end to the other. When I used to live in another apartment and I had a shower, I had a bar on all four sides in order to grasp it. And though it's really two convenient things. It could save your life and is also a good place to hang your washcloth.
Again, a reminder, our number here is 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. Sometimes you have no control over it. You've set the right temperature, and then the water temperature changes without you doing anything. Is that because people are running water in other parts of the house?
Well, what happens is, it depends upon how the building was built and what kind of building it was. The thing is, it's different in every kind of a building. But in the old buildings, what happens is somebody flushes the toilet, and all of a sudden that takes cold water away from your hot water, and all of a sudden the hot water comes through. That is a thing that happens time and time again, and I have several cases that I work on just those kinds of conditions. And for a landlord not to have known this was going on is ridiculous. I mean, he knows what's going on in the building. The superintendent knows what's going on in the building. They know that there are things going on. So they have to put water pressure adjusters. There are devices.
But if you own the building?
What?
Let's say you own the house.
If you own the house and you find this problem, you should call a plumber to correct it in such a way that when your wife or your husband flushes the toilet, you don't get scalded.
Should we take another call? BAI, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Okay, so I have a kind of a silly question, but
there's no question
that's silly. Every question is important. It's not only important for me, it's important to our listening audience.
Okay, great. All right, so we have this little shower, and I love taking a bath. So, of course, we asked the landlord if they could put a tub in there and take out the sink and blah, blah, blah. Of course, they said no. And then I found something online. It's this Japanese bath plastic tub thing that you put in your shower. You fill it up and you climb inside, and it's amazing. And I love it. Now, here's my question. So sometimes when I'm releasing the water into the shower after the tub, it drains into my neighbor downstairs, and they complain that there's a drip. But it doesn't happen all the time, and now I'm scared. What if I go flying through the freaking floor? What if there's a serious leak that I'm doing? I don't know. I was getting a little paranoid.
Well, sometimes in a drain system, there is what they call a venting condition or a loop of the piping into the tub area sometimes. And if you put too much water into it or something like that, it overflows inside the cavity of the wall. Or there could be in the – I ask you a question. Does that tub have a stopper?
No. Oh, this tub, the plastic tub, it has a stopper, yes.
Is that stopper on the tub or is it outside the tub on a piece of pipe that goes to the floor?
It has both. Okay, so –
Oh, all right. It has both.
It has both.
So, all right.
Yeah.
The one that has the thing that you pick up and put down on the outside of the tub, those pipes, that's a real old – that was put in the 1920s, that bathtub. That pipe may have a hole in it so that when you fill up the water over it, it overflows through that hole because it's corroded through and through. So that may have to be replaced.
But Alice, she just installed this into her shower.
Yes, you have to.
This is a new one.
Yeah, that condition takes a little bit of investigation in order to figure out where that overflow connection is taking place in order to prevent that from happening.
Okay. All right.
But anyway, it sounds like something you're going to have to deal with because it could be dangerous.
No, not dangerous. It's annoying to the tenant below.
Yeah, well. Thank you so much for your call.
Thanks.
And you are listening to Leonard Lopate at Large on WBAI, listener-sponsored radio in 99.5 FM in New York. With Alvin Ubell, we're talking about all of a wide range of things that do-it-yourselfers can do. We are taking your calls at 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. And let's take another call, okay? BAI, you're on the air.
Oh, hello. Hi. I have an indelicate question, but I'll try to phrase it very delicately. And I hate to admit that I actually agree with Donald Trump on something. But he pointed out once in a rally.
Excuse me. You have to stop for a second. You've called WBAI and admitted that you agree with Donald Trump about something?
Yes. I will elaborate.
This may be a first.
One thing only. Now, there are people on the station who actually like him and vote for him, which I would never do. But he did point out one interesting problem that we all have, I think, which is that when you flush the toilet, these low-flow toilets, it's fine for liquid. I'm going to be delicate. It's fine for liquid waste, but solid waste, you flush and flush, and it won't go down. Now, what do we do about that, given that I'm in an apartment and I don't know what the, so I have no control over it. I can't install a new, high-flow toilet if such exists, if it's legal. But is there something like, is there a chemical or something that won't hurt the toilet that I can pour in that will dissolve the solid waste so it'll be flushable? Otherwise, I flush it 20 times.
Let me ask you something.
Plunger.
Can I ask you a question? You have a tank on your bath? It's a flush valve.
What?
Just a valve that you turn and the water comes out.
Well, I never deal with that at all. I just flush it.
But the device that you press to flush it, is it on a tank behind the actual?
No.
It's not one of those tanks that fills up with water?
No, she has a flushometer or a flush valve. Now, that flush valve can be adjusted. The idea is, the super or the whoever takes care of the building, how many people live in your building?
We have 24 apartments.
Oh, then you have a superintendent that's there. He can adjust the flush valve by there's a little cap on the top that has to come off, and inside there's a screw that you put a screwdriver down, and you open it up a little bit more so that the flush runs more water into the into the bowl and flushes the water out. That's an adjustable device.
Okay.
Now, you say the flush valve. That's inside. I know there's some sort of valve that you turn, I think, and, a round kind of thing.
That's the thing to shut off. That may be something to shut it off totally, but whatever you're pressing or turning has a device that opens up the diaphragm that's on the inside that permits a lot more water to go through
more pressure.
Right.
So the problem with these low flow toilets
isn't that the hole goes down too small. It doesn't work on a matter of pressure. It works on a matter of duration of more water coming into the bowl in order to sweep all of the debris down the waistline.
So she's just not getting enough water into.
Yeah, she's not getting enough water.
I could do it myself if I.
No, you better not touch it.
No.
Because if you take that valve off accidentally, you're going to have water all over the place.
No, I'm saying I could if I want to flush, I could take a big pot and fill it with water and pour it in, and that would work. Because to get my super to fix something, it'll take forever.
But I would get the super to adjust the flush valve.
Yeah, but I think that's a good idea. She can pour some water in.
You could use a pail of water and dump it right into the toilet.
But you don't want to do that every time you use the toilet.
No, it's annoying.
It's a lot better than an outhouse.
Thank you so much for your call. Let's take another call. BAI, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Oh, hi, how you doing? I have like a kind of like an embarrassing question.
Wait, we're getting these embarrassing questions.
Go ahead.
Okay. Like a friend of mine, when I go over to his house, right, it's always smelling like feces and stuff. And like he has air freshener, like it's crazy air freshener.
All right.
And I was wondering, is that like a public, a plumbing issue?
Yeah, that's a plumbing issue. When you have odors coming into an apartment from the sanitary system, that means that there's a crack or an open vent stack someplace in the wall section or near the bowl, which is letting the sewer gases come into the apartment or into the building. You have to realize that if you're listening, is that every building in the city of New York in particular has what they call a fresh air intake and a vent stack. The fresh air intake is near the street level, someplace in the front or someplace like that, and the other one is on the roof. And that creates what is known as a vector that ventilates the whole sanitary system automatically all the time so that you have fresh air in the pipes and no sewer gas buildup. Once there's a crack in one of those pipes, the sewer gases sometimes comes into the apartment.
I hope that helps.
That has to be investigated where that opening
so who would
or
he
crack
call?
Is.
Who did...
That's usually a plumber that knows how to do that.
Okay.
Oh, okay. It's to say, because this is actually a house. And he lives in a basement.
Then there may be a crack in the basement, crack pipe that is letting the sewer gases come into the basement. That's another reason why someone should never live in a basement.
Right. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
And let's take another call. BAI, you're on the air. Hello?
Hi.
Are you there? Okay, we'll try another one. BAI, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes. To you.
Yes, hi, good afternoon. Great. Hi, my name is Anaya A., and although I'm not 100% sure what the topic is this afternoon, I took a chance to call in because I've been trying to reach several of your hosts in regards to a discrimination situation that we're facing in New York City presently. And yeah. I know your station is on top of it. So,
yeah, but that's not the, right now we are talking about doing it yourself. We have Alvin Ubell, who comes by to give people advice on how to take care of things in their homes, repair things and the like. I think that you should probably just try to get in touch with the station manager.
Okay.
And you, but that's not something I can handle for you on the air. Okay. It's not really what we're talking about on the show.
Yeah,
thank you so much for your call and good luck.
Yes. Good luck.
Okay. Let's take another call. BAI, you're on the air.
Hello. Is that me?
Yes, it's you.
Yes.
Hi.
Love your show. Leonard, you have a wonderful voice. I'm sure you do a lot of scholarship. You ask excellent questions. This is not just ad lib, right? You research your guests very well. I mean, they say, great question, great question. It's a pleasure to listen to you.
Well, thank you so much.
What do you do for a living?
Well, to be honest with you, I help people exercise, and I go to their homes, and the topic, I wanted to stay on topic. There was a philosophical thing that I didn't want to just briefly mention after this, but, you know, the cleanliness of a home obviously is important. One quick question. Obviously, you don't put a fire extinguisher near the stove, right? If there's a stove fire, that extinguisher is going to be too hot. I told my parents that, and, you know, they were old. They probably didn't understand. But you don't put a fire extinguisher, obviously, near the fire. You put it away so that you could, obviously, extinguish the fire.
Well, you want to put it close enough so that you can get it if there's a fire.
You want it usually someplace at the entryway to the kitchen area. Because sometimes what most of the time happens when a fire starts in the kitchen, it's you're not in the kitchen. You're outside in the dining room area. And then all of a sudden you smell something burning and then you need the fire extinguisher at that the opening of that kitchen area. The other thing is that the problem with fire extinguishers are that most people don't know how to use them.
In other words, they sell you
the fire extinguisher and the first thing that people do instead of reading the instructions is they throw the instructions away and they hang it on the wall and that thing thinks that they satisfy everything. You really have to use or practice with the fire extinguisher what to do, how to pull out the pin, how to break the label on it, how to get it working instantaneously. I've asked many people, do you know how to use that? No. He says, I never use it because they never had a fire. So I was a damage control man in the U.S. Navy. We practice using that equipment constantly, and that's why you learn how to use fire extinguishers and how to put out a fire.
Right. Now, wouldn't it be common sense for there to be a law about if you sell a fire extinguisher, at least demonstrate it and make sure the person knows how to use it?
Oh, right? You're asking the manufacturers more than they want to touch. All they're obligated to do is give you the instructions,
right.
And that's all they're obligated to do.
They might actually feel that there would be a problem in case something went wrong. They could be sued because you didn't teach me correctly.
Well, yes. When I was on Good Morning America, I demonstrated on the air how do you use a fire. We actually had an actual fire in the kitchen, setting it all up, and I came in and I just put out the fire with the fire extinguisher, and that was all filmed, and the audience seen. All that took place in 2 minutes and 30 seconds.
Well, you don't want the fire to last a lot longer.
No, but that's it.
Okay.
Okay. One quick question. My mom left the stove on with the teapot. The teapot was so old that it didn't whistle anymore. We were at dinner. She said, oh, my God, I think I left the kettle on. The kettle was all burnt plastic. There was remnants of it all on the ceiling. Fortunately, it wasn't a serious fire. But the dark black plastic melted. Some of that is on the walls. Can that start getting to be like dust and then you're breathing in a very toxic type of material? That has to be cleaned properly, right?
Well, the only way you can clean stuff that is carbonized like that is you have to wash the ceiling, then sandpaper it, spackle it, and repaint it.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, that's what I thought.
A lot of work, but the alternative is not so great.
Yes.
Right. And the last one is if I can, a little philosophical, and it goes to home ownership. It is very sad. And listen, I mean, this idea of socialism is a terrible thing. But where is our humanity when we don't have, like Bernie Sanders said, we have hundreds of thousands of people who don't have the luxury of a nice home, who don't have this worry. It's a very sad comment. We love our celebrities. We love the wealthy and powerful, and obviously that's how Trump became president, and he couldn't give a damn about homeless people, nor do I think de Blasio and Cuomo did. Oh, the coronavirus? Oh, my God, people might die? Oh, it's a terrible thing. But people who are suffering, where is the humanity? Where is the front page story that somebody's actually doing something really, you know, because what happens if all these homeless people start developing a virus, and then wouldn't that be karmic? The homeless people actually all of a sudden create a disease because of their unsanitary conditions that spreads to everybody.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, this is a topic for another show, and we may very well wind up doing a show like that, but it's irrelevant to this conversation. we didn't bring Al Ubell in to talk about politics, but thank you so much for your call, and let's try to take another call.
Yes, Hi. And I want to say I'm in agreement with you.
Okay. Hi.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I live in a top floor of a two-family private house, and the bathroom sink has a clog in it, and I tried to get rid of the clog, but I tried the liquids, I tried Drano, and I also have a snake that I put down 25 feet. I put it in. I fed it all down in there, but the clog won't go away. Now, there's a trap underneath the sink, and I fed the snake through that through the trap, and I was one. And if I plug that trap back up again, and I turn the water on, the sink fills up in like 10 seconds. So I figured that the clog was right behind the wall, you know, like a foot down or something. But so how was I able to feed a 25-foot snake in there and not get rid of the clog?
The snake is maybe the head of the snake, what you go in first, is about a half inch in diameter. And then the wire or the snaking wire is only maybe about a quarter inch in diameter. And those snakes sometimes work, or they just bore themselves through a clogged area, but they don't loosen up what's in the clog. And clogs happen not necessarily because of the material that you're flushing down the drain. It could be a misdesigned piece of plumbing that he made a loop or a catch or a turn or an elbow somewhere where the debris is getting built up, and it solidifies into a certain lump there that the water can't pass through, and all the flushing and plumbing and pounding with the plunger and everything else is not going to work.
Would Drano work? Something like that?
Sometimes it does. If it's a material that is like something has calcium in it, or hair, or food products, the Drano or the clobber or all these other things sometimes work. But the idea is you have to let it sit for all this. This is either sulfuric acid or some kind of acidity acid that it's eating away and maybe loosening it up. The careful thing about it, sometimes some of those chemicals not only eat up the products you want to get rid of, but it also eats up the pipe.
And
so
that's scary.
That's a big problem, and you're causing a leakage. What I would suggest, if this is a consistent condition, if you in a small house, you may have to get the owner to hire a plumber and figure out what's going on, because it is very complicated how the waistlines of a building work. In fact, the waistlines are more complicated than the water flowing directly to you, the hot and cold water, because that's under pressure and there's no debris in that water. The water that goes out of the sink, it has a lot of debris that actually sometimes solidifies into a lump that has to be taken care of in a different way.
Well, the clog is like, if I fill the sink up with water, the water will go down real slow.
Yes, right. So what happened is the aperture of the water flow has been reduced by the clog.
Thank you so much for your call. We're going to try to sneak one more call in here. Hi, BAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. We lost them.
Did we lose you? Or are you just not coming to the phone? Okay. Well, I said, so let's talk about that a bit more. There's a lot of water. There's a lot of pressure when the water comes in, but getting it out.
It's all by gravity.
Uh-huh.
That's all by gravity. It's just working by gravity. Barometric pressure, that's the way it flows. But it's more complicated than that, because as the water flows, it also draws air with it at the same time. And sometimes a bubble can get clogged. A bubble of air can block the water flow.
Does it matter whether it's going into the city's pipe system or whether it's your own septic system?
It's your own system. The water flows through the pipe by gravity, and it goes through a couple of elbows. It drops down, goes around, and then it has to go out to the city and goes through another trap that's in the basement. But when something is happening at a particular sink, it's usually something in the walls that is causing it, or sometimes a pipe is bent, or some guy, a so-called plumber, who was not a plumber, put something in and caused the problem.
Now, we're pretty much out of time, but I just want to address one other thing. This is the time of year you suggest that people have their air conditioners checked because they're going to be using them in the next month or so?
Yeah, this is a great time of the year. You don't really need the air conditioning right now, and the air conditioning guys are not that busy yet, but do it now. Have your air conditioning cleaned out. Make sure the filters are changed or washed or repaired. And it doesn't matter whether you have a window type air conditioning or a central air conditioning unit. This is the time of the year where you should have it checked out to make sure it's lubricated where it needs to be lubricated, needs to be cleaned where it needs to be cleaned, and it's workable.
And who do you call for that?
You have to call an air conditioning contractor, but sometimes
everything you're suggesting is going to cost me a lot of money.
If you want to have a luxury of life, there's sometimes you can't depend upon yourself being knowledgeable to fix it, but you may have to be knowledgeable to hire the right person.
So call the experts.
Call an expert. In this instance, air conditioning is complicated. They can see with their own eyes and their experiences what is going right, wrong, or indifferent with that air conditioning unit.
Now, I mentioned earlier that you serve as an expert witness in court cases. Are the kinds of cases you see seasonal?
No, as far as court cases, there's no season to that. There's no season for people getting hurt or injured. That goes on all year round. The only thing is that sometimes when the courts are closed, I'm a little slow, but most of the time I'm very busy, and we work for a lot of law firms, and we work for some city agencies occasionally, and federal, and even some federal agencies.
Uh-huh. And thank you for working on WBAI with me.
And the next time I'm here, I'll try to show all of the world and all of New York how to go forth and fix, save energy, money, and do it safely.
Oh, that James Taylor, you can't get rid of him. And that brings us to the end of today's show. If you're new to our program and you like what you've been hearing, you can access past shows streaming on demand at WBAI.org. We're also available as an iTunes podcast. Alvin, one other thing. If people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
They can go online at AccurateBuilding.com.
AccurateBuilding.com.
AccurateBuilding.com. And also they could write to me at Alvin@AccurateBuilding.com.
But okay, again, getting back to this show, if you want to hear us, you can always stream. We stream on demand at WBAI.org. We're available as an iTunes podcast. And don't forget to check out Leonard Lopate at Large on Facebook and Twitter. And at our website, leonardlopateatlarge.com, where you can find links to all of our past shows. And we also invite your comments to all of those sites. We hope that you'll join us tomorrow when former Assistant Secretary of Education Diane Ravitch will come by to discuss her book, Slaying Goliath: The Passionate Resistance to Privatization and the Fight to Save America's Public Schools. It's an important issue politically right now, and we hope that you will tune in tomorrow to hear Diane Ravitch talk about it.
It's Pacifica Bylaws time. Thinking's really tough. Everyone's giving it up. Look at Washington. Now you can give up thinking, too. No more trying to understand confusing ballots, making your own choice for people to take care of your station. Directors you've never heard of from places you don't know, chosen by people who are suing us in court. People from nowhere. They'll be making your choices for you. They'll be running your station. And you can donate to them. But they haven't taken away your voice yet. Send a message to the people from nowhere. Vote yes for them to run your station without you. Or, to keep your voice and your own local station board, vote no. It's still up to you.
WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns with some brief news headlines. Racing to confront a growing public health threat, key lawmakers in the House and the Senate reached a deal today to provide $8.3 billion in emergency aid to combat the coronavirus, and the House planned to vote later today to approve it, according to three officials familiar with the negotiations. The bipartisan package, which includes nearly $7.8 billion for agencies dealing with the virus, is substantially larger than what the White House initially proposed in late February. It also authorizes roughly $500 million to allow Medicare providers to administer telehealth services so that more elderly patients who are at greater risk for the virus can receive care at home. Three more people died from infections in Washington state yesterday, bringing the total death toll from the outbreak in the United States to 9. All of those deaths have occurred in Washington state, while more than 120 cases have been reported in 16 states. Globally, the outbreak continued to spread at a faster pace. COVID-19 has killed more than 3,100 people and infected at least 93,000 people in close to 80 countries. The World Health Organization said new estimates suggested the disease was more deadly than previously believed, with mortality rate of 3.4%, but that the disease was less easily transmitted than previously believed. In response to some of the economic impacts, the Federal Reserve announced yesterday that it was cutting interest rates by half a percentage point. The U.S. Central Bank's benchmark funds rate fell to a range from 1 to 1.25%. CNBC characterized the cut as an emergency measure since it came between the policy meetings where Fed leaders usually make adjustments. This was the first emergency rate cut since the 2008 financial crisis. It came after the stock market saw a dramatic fall last week, followed by a big rebound on Monday and yet another plunge yesterday. Stocks have risen slightly again today off Joe Biden's win in Super Tuesday. CNN reports that Trump's new personnel chief is distributing questionnaires to potential political appointees to verify their loyalty to the president. As part of the Trump litmus test, candidates must explain which part of Trump's campaign, quote, most appealed to them. The campaign to identify and purge anti-Trump staffers is being led by 29-year-old John McKinty, who Trump recently appointed head of the Presidential Personnel Office. Before he was rehired this year, McKinty was fired in 2018 by then-Chief of Staff John Kelly because he was under federal investigation for financial crimes. President Trump is clearly not happy about yesterday's Super Tuesday results. In a series of tweets sent this morning, Trump angrily railed against the, quote, Democratic establishment, and more specifically Senator Elizabeth Warren, for what he sees as a concerted effort to derail Senator Bernie Sanders' campaign. Biden swept the South and the Midwest yesterday, propelled by a huge majority of African-American votes. Biden is also winning in Texas currently. Meanwhile, Sanders won his home state of Vermont and scored victories in the West, winning Colorado and Utah. And, according to the Associated Press, Sanders won the biggest prize of all last night, California, doing so with significant Latinx support. Biden's strong showing came after the Democratic Party establishment consolidated around the former vice president, with Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg dropping out in recent days and throwing their support behind Biden. Beto O'Rourke also endorsed Joe Biden. Former New York City Mayor Mike Bloomberg and Senator Elizabeth Warren both performed well below expectations last night. Warren is still in the race, but Bloomberg, who spent hundreds of millions of dollars to self-fund his presidential run, announced today that he is suspending his campaign and also endorsing Joe Biden. In a fundraising email to supporters, Warren's team said that despite the results, its focus is on the upcoming primaries on March 10th. Weather in Washington, D.C. today is mostly sunny, highs in the low 60s. Tonight,